I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to dive into the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy. This dispute has produced litigation and hard feelings. We're going to talk about what's at stake, what the options are, and what the benefits and costs of those options might be. My guests are John McNichols, Chair of the Board of the Indiana Transportation Museum, and Mike Corbett, publisher of the Hamilton County Business Magazine. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy. I know there are strong feelings about this on I would say, both sides, but there seem to be multiple sides here. So if you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are John McNichols. He is chair of the board of the Indiana Transportation Museum. He's in here in the studio with me. And joining us by phone is Mike Corbett, who is publisher of Hamilton County Business Magazine. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have you both with us. So first, for those people who aren't living this controversy, give me a thumbnail, just a brief description of how this got started. And I think probably, Mike, I'm going to start with you on that one. What is this dispute about?
Well, essentially, it's about whether or not we want to use the Nickel Plate right-of-way as for a railroad or for a trail. That's the basic controversy.
Okay, and where is the push coming from? Because I know I know where John is. I'm asking you to frame this at the beginning. Where did the push to make it a trail start, or
well,
to consider
I guess
it a trail?
The most recent time this has been brought up, and I think it's probably been brought up from time to time over the years, but the most recent time was within I guess it was earlier this year, when the cities of Noblesville and Fishers made an announcement that they were going to move ahead with a plan to pull out the rails and make this a biking and hiking trail. Both mayors, Mayor Ditzler from Noblesville and Mayor Fadness, have come up with this plan together, and they decided that that was what they were going to do with the right of way. Well, that they wanted to do it the right of way. Of course, there's a process that they have to go through, but that was what they wanted to do.
Okay. So, John McNichols, why is this a bad idea?
Well, there's a number of reasons why we don't believe it's the best use of the right of way. Obviously, the first one is that it was created as a railroad. It has had a lot of utility and use through the years, certainly by us, but the other part of that is that it is a key part of history for both Noblesville and Fishers that, frankly, were whistle stops along the Nickel Plate line, and it's what really created those communities in the first place. So, you know, there's a number of different trails running around now, some that even parallel this one and some that could. So we're just not convinced that it's an either-or. In other words, that you would have to rip up the rails to put a trail in. Our contention, based on the National Rails to Trails Conservancy, is that very often trails are put beside the rails in a right-of-way and coexist in many different ways. We think that that's probably a better option. We don't want to pit the rails against the trails necessarily, because I'm a cyclist. I like trails.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly don't want to say that trails are bad, because we believe we need more trails. But to take something of value and tear it up just to put something else that may be of value, we just don't think that's the right option if there are alternatives, which is what we believe.
We are talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Logan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Logan, welcome to the program.
Well, I appreciate you having me here to talk, and listening to this, ever since the beginning of this controversy coming to the forefront, my concern is that with a railroad that dates back all the way to, 1849, we have a valuable asset in this community that, shouldn't be allowed to be removed with what seems to be such little foresight and kind of ill-conceived notions behind how a trail might be a better replacement for it. So there's certainly a lot of evidence out there and research that myself, along with a number of other community members, have gone into looking at what better alternatives might exist.
And what are some of those alternatives that you think?
Well, the one that sticks out most to me that most people aren't aware of, the city of Fishers has actually already received about $1.3 million of funding, or they will be shortly, for another trail, which is also called the Nickel Plate Trail, that will be going from the municipal complex in Fishers up to 131st and then cutting over to Connor Prairie. So I would say the most accessible alternative would be to utilize this trail that already has partial funding and connect it the rest of the way to Noblesville. And as Mr. McNichols had indicated, there's also possibilities of doing rail and trails. And there's multiple examples across the United States of where that particular type of feature exists in excellent harmony and creates kind of the pinnacle of development that you would want to see along just a railroad or just a trail. Combine them both and get the best of both worlds.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call and for sharing your thoughts. Mike Corbett, I'm going to ask you, and I should say at this point, we issued invitations far and wide on this to try to get as many people from as many different points. Some of it is, it's summer, there were people on vacation. I don't want to say that there are people avoiding the discussion or anything like that. But we did want to open this up as far as possible. So, Mike, I'm going to ask you, presumably you've got two mayors here. They didn't decide to do this just on a whim. They didn't wake up and say, let's play a prank on our communities, rip out, a historical artifact just to see everybody get upset. What was their reasoning for doing it? What was the argument that they advanced?
Well, I believe the argument that comes out of Fishers is that, Fishers is undergoing a large amount of redevelopment in their downtown. And certainly trails are seen as a huge amenity for new development. So I believe that the developers that are putting up the buildings down there wanted to see trail access to downtown Fishers. And I think that is kind of what initiated on that side. To be honest with you, I really don't know what's initiating it from the Noblesville side. There doesn't seem to be that much in it for Noblesville. I have a feeling that, they met together and Noblesville said, sounds like a pretty good idea to me. Let's go ahead and do it.
Well, there's some concerns about cost avoidance, and that obviously railroads have to be maintained, tracks have to be maintained. There are costs associated. Don't worry, John. I will give you your shot too. Don't worry. I can see you leaping at the hook there. So, but I'm going to ask Mike first. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that railroads have to be maintained. But I mean, the deal here, though, is that the Transportation Museum has shown over the years that they can pay to maintain the rails. And that's frankly what frustrates me a little bit, is that
I mean, say we didn't have a railroad and somebody came to us with an idea and said, you know, if we put it in a railroad, we'll be able to pay for it. And we would expect a business to be able to then be able to maintain the rails and build up the railroad. Here we already have the amenity. We already have the asset. ITM has shown over the years that if they're allowed to operate on it, that they're able to maintain the railroads, pay their bills, and I don't know if they make a profit or not. They're a nonprofit, but they have shown that they can deliver the service and deliver on the maintenance that they said that they were going to maintain, that they were going to deliver on, and they've already proven it. We don't need them to come. We don't have to speculate that somebody's going to come in and try to make a go of it. They've already shown they can.
John.
Yeah, in response to that, John, one of the things that when you talk about it costs money to maintain the rails, this is one of the things that has probably been one of the biggest bones of contention with the Port Authority and the cities that own the rail line from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In the original operating agreement that we had with the Port Authority from 1996 to 2006, it was clearly stated in that it was the cities and the owners and the HHPA's responsibility to maintain the right-of-way, which is the tracks, the signals, the drainage, everything. Since that time, right away, they realized they didn't have the money to do that. So from the very beginning in 1996, the Indiana Transportation Museum has foot the bill for maintaining the rail line.
Mm-hmm.
We have been prohibited from going out directly and getting grants, so... Mm-hmm. The Port Authority has done some grant work to put some money into the railroad, but not necessarily from anything that is organic. So we've been maintaining the railroad pretty much all 39 miles of it for the last 20 years.
What's the cost for doing that?
The industry standard is about $8,000 to $10,000 per mile per year. We put about $3,000 to $4,000 per mile per year, because we, for the last 11 years, have not had a long-term agreement that would allow us to invest more into it, because it would be like doing a major renovation in an apartment that you live in that you don't own. And while we maintained it well enough to operate, we have several things that we've got on our drawing board and have for a number of years, not only in capital improvements to the railway itself, but also extensions and maintenance on things that we received in a condition that we really needed to do something with.
So we're talking, though, annually then, that just
annually,
the cost
yes.
of maintaining it is somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000 a year.
Yes, exactly. And we put somewhere in the range of that just about every year. And over the years, that adds up to quite a bit.
And where does the funding for that, does that come from? You say you can't pursue grants. Where
sure.
do you get the money to do that?
Yeah, we're basically, even though we're a not-for-profit, we're set up so that most of our revenue comes from ticket sales. So excursions that we run, school tours that we run, different venues that we do, the state fair, some other events that we do, the ticket gate is what actually pays our expenses. About 75% of our revenue comes in from ticket sales. There's some revenue that comes in from corporate sponsorships and personal donations, but the bulk of our funding comes from our ticket sales.
How large is your annual budget? I mean, how big a piece
sure.
of maintaining this railroad is,
sure.
is you know?
Yeah, maintaining the railroad is about 50% of our expenses.
Okay.
We have a budget that, back in 2011 was about $500,000. The last year we ran in 2015, it was actually $715,000, and we made a fairly healthy profit on that to pay down some debt and do some other things. So we were in probably the best shape we've been in a long time in 2015.
What would happen, if the railroad does go away, the trail goes away, what happens to your mission then?
Well, our mission is the same. We're
yeah.
the Indiana Transportation
yeah.
Museum. We are not the Noblesville and Fishers Transportation
yeah.
Museum.
Okay.
And we've always had a regional plan to provide rail excursions and rail experience to the residents of Indiana. So we're looking at expansion plans currently, and we still believe that the right answer is to really have a contiguous line, not one where you rip the very center of it up from Noblesville to Fishers, which if you look at the way the line is laid out, that is the very center of the line. So it prohibits somebody from running from the north side of Hamilton County downtown, for instance, or anybody from downtown running up to the north part of Hamilton County or to Conner Prairie or to any other organization that happens to be in Noblesville or Fishers. So what we really believe in our regional strategy is there are other cities who really want to have a presence there. So we're actually – we announced last week that we've got an agreement with Logansport, and we're working on other cities along that line that are interested in doing some things and had some meetings even this morning. So certainly we want to try to figure out what the best use of that right-of-way is.
We are talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. My guests are John McNichols. He's chair of the Indiana Transportation Museum, and Mike Corbett. He is publisher of Hamilton County Business Magazine. We've got a lot of calls and social media messages, emails waiting, so we will get to those when we get back. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy today on No Limits. My guests are John McNichols, he's chair of the board of the Indiana Transportation Museum, and Mike Corbett, who is publisher of Hamilton County Business Magazine. I've got a full phone bank of people calling in to talk about this, as well as emails and social media messages, so I'm going to do my standard thing here and just ask our listeners to be as succinct as possible so we can get to as many people as possible. We're going to start with a comment and question from a listener named Deanne via Facebook, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Deanne writes, "I would like to see the rails left in place and a trail to accompany it. I think a good study of other cities that have encountered similar options would be interesting and perhaps helpful to advise planners." Mike, have they, has that sort of due diligence or background work gone on? Have they looked at options from other places or experiences in other parts of the country that have dealt with this issue, or are there other places that have dealt with this issue?
Oh, I believe that there are other instances. I'm not sure that the cities have looked into it, but there are other instances where trails have gone in next to rails and worked successfully. I know there are people on the rail side of the issue that have just kind of done Google searches and so forth and found examples of it. They posted on social media, and you can see pictures of it. So I know it happens. It's definitely possible.
John, is that part of your organization's complaint, is that not enough background research has gone into this idea?
Yeah, John, we were probably surprised as anybody when they stood on the platform that was built for the train and announced that they were going to rip up the rails, literally, and put a trail in. It's interesting to note that, as Mike pointed out, there are many examples, not only all over the country, but, right here in Fishers and right here in Noblesville, where the trail and the rail are parallel in many different places of both cities. So it's not an unprecedented thing. I believe our biggest complaint has been that we have not seen any kind of comprehensive analysis that would even look at the alternatives, that it just seemed to be the most convenient way in their minds, so that it really didn't require much due diligence. And that's one of the things we've had a complaint about, is there are alternatives. We just think they need to be looked at before they do something rash that has ramifications for generations to come.
So what was their response? I'm presuming after this announcement came and you called and said sort of, why?
What?
Why? What was their answer? What was the response?
The response was basically, you guys don't run enough. And we're kind of like, well, what do you mean? We ran like 265 trips out of Fishers in 2015 alone. But they acted like they thought it was a higher and best use to make it a trail, mm-hmm. and not just make a trail, but rip up what was already there and make a trail. So their reaction was basically, it's going to cost too much to get the train back running, which is also another fallacy. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that they came up with a statistic that said that you need 125 feet of right-of-way between a trail and rail. And not only is that not true in Fishers or Noblesville, I believe Allisonville Road doesn't even have 125 feet of right-of-way. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a ridiculous amount of space needed, and we're not sure still where they got that number, because as the people who've done the research and looked at trails and rails together, it's nowhere near that amount of space.
And you've gone to court, federal court, right, to try to slow this. What is the nature of your legal argument?
The nature of our legal argument is basically that in March of 2016, the Port Authority, who is the one that determines who operates on it, suspended our operations based on a claim that we were unsafe and the tracks were unsafe. And right away, and I think that might have been a prudent thing for them to do, but they ignored the Federal Railroad Administration's findings later in April that basically gave us a clean bill of health with no safety violations. And keep in mind, the FRA, Federal Railroad Administration, is similar to the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, to planes.
We are talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what a listener named Connor has done and call us at 866-476-3881. Connor, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Certainly. Certainly. What's on your mind?
So I'll be totally up front here and say I am a director of one of the companies that submitted a proposal to operate the line alternative to ITM for the HHBA. Now, something that I just heard was best and highest usage. It's an incredible asset, this railroad. I mean, their possibility is endless. One of the things that I have yet to hear, outside of it being historic and a heritage, et cetera, is that this is more than just talking about the past. We have to think forward as well. We have to look at companies like Metra, companies like the RTA in Denver, who have taken corridors and used corridors of either old or new rail, and have revitalized many parts of their cities by giving proper access to the people that live along those corridors.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment. And I should say that we have several others. We have Jason via Twitter, Philip via Facebook, a listener named Ruth who didn't want to go on the air, who's sort of saying similar things, that this is not so much about the past or the present, that there are better uses, that we do not use our railroads in the fashion that we should. John, you're chomping at the bit,
sure.
So I'll give you a shot. Thanks very much for the call, Connor.
Connor, one of the things that we have said all along, and it's been backed up with market studies that we've done and economic impact studies that we've done, that actually show that on top of any economic impact that we receive for ticket sales, that the average person who rides the train, especially if they're an out-of-towner, will also buy gas, stop at a convenience store, eat at a restaurant, have a drink at a bar, even stay in hotels in the area. So the economic impact is what we believe. This is a business of at least tourism. And certainly our studies have said that even in the number of runs that we make in a typical year, we can have over $500,000 impact to the cities we serve by just those kind of external kind of things, and gas and other gifts and things that are purchased by the people who ride the train.
And, John, I will just mention also that I approach this from a business perspective as well. And I also think that, and Connor brought up a good point, you know, and possibly you're planning on getting to this, but there have been now five proposals on how to use the line that were taken by the Hoosier Heritage Port Authority there as they were trying to determine what's going to happen with the line in the future. And they're all available, and I was reading them last night. And it's invigorating to see creativity from business people going to work here. There is so much potential for this railroad beyond just excursions, which are wonderful. Excursions ought to be one of them, but people are bringing up ideas on moving freight and factories along the line and being able to serve. I mean, there are lots of ideas that are being generated just by this
just by this request for proposals that the Port Authority put out. So once you start putting, you know, creativity of business people to work, it just seems such a shame for the communities to then go in and take out the very means that they're going to need to make this happen.
We've got a contrary view being expressed here by a listener named Melissa, who connected with us via email, and her thoughts are echoed by Ty, who connected with us on Facebook. Melissa reached out at nolimits@wfyi.org, and Ty found us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Melissa writes, as an avid runner, I would use a trail 5 to 7 days a week. I cannot afford the train rides that ITM offered. I've used the Monon, and it's a great place to run. It is also great for businesses and homes along the trail. Ty says similarly, how many people from Fishers and Noblesville are coming to visit or utilize the Transportation Museum versus people who might use the trails? I'm confident the Monon sees more traffic than any museum in Indianapolis. Mike, I'm going to throw that one to you first. I know John's going to want a piece of it too, but that seems to me to get to the crux of this, is that the barrier for participation, the barrier for entry and making use of this space is lower if it's a trail. Literally all you need is a pair of shoes. Shoes actually in many cases are optional. But you can access it on your feet. You don't have to pay a fee or anything like that to do it. Is that the crux of the argument for the trails?
Yeah, probably. And I can't really argue with that because that's true. It costs less to use a trail than it costs to ride the train. However, a trail experience is much more common than a train experience. And it's difficult to recreate a train experience, and it's easy to recreate a trail experience just about anywhere. There are a lot. Most everybody uses trails. I mean, trails are extremely common, and perhaps trains aren't used quite as frequently. But the fact is, there are lots of ways to put in trails, and there are lots of trails to access. Frankly, I think, you know, we need to think about building trails where people are going, as opposed to just putting them in places that are convenient because there happens to be a right-of-way there. Let's have a comprehensive plan on trails. You know, Noblesville has a comprehensive plan for trails, as a matter of fact. It's a trail plan that was put together back in 2008 and then amended in 2011. They identified in that plan 99 places in Noblesville where you could put a trail, and one of them was not the Nickel Plate Railroad. I mean, there are lots of places where we need to put trails, but this isn't necessarily it.
Gotten a message from a listener named Michael via Facebook. Again, you can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Michael writes, regarding the Nickel Plate issue, Noblesville came on board with Fishers late in the process. Fishers had plans drawn up and was doing legal research up to 2 years prior to their announcement and bringing Noblesville on board. Noblesville had readily admitted it would be several years at best before any trail construction could ever begin. The trail, if it did get underway, would be done in sections, taking several more years. The city's engaged in cloak and dagger, the optics of which are horrible. The mayor's office listed multiple emails confidential with words like gag order in place to keep this trail plan under wraps. Members of the HHPA and Hamilton County Leadership Academy, not a government agency, were told about this plan even before the county council was notified. Why? It all leads to a lot of distrust and makes this plan look even worse. Is that part of the problem, Mike Corbett, that a lot of this was done without a tremendous amount of transparency?
Well, it certainly seems that way when you look at it from the outside. I mean, that could be a big part of the problem, but the bigger part of the problem is it's just a bad idea. I mean, people do distrust the process for many reasons, and a lot of times it seems from people who aren't engaged in the process that these decisions are made without a lot of consultation with the public. And this is an extremely unpopular idea. And, you know, it's difficult to find people. I mean, you know, your producer asked me if I could come up with somebody who is in favor of it that's not associated with the city, and frankly, I don't know anybody. It's just the idea of tearing up the rails so it's an exclusive trail is just not a popular idea.
We have an email. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, let me go back to something I think Ty said and about the commonality of use of trails. Mm-hmm. And again, let me restate that certainly we're not against trails. We support trails and believe that trails are a good idea. From the start, we've always said we wanted to see the alternatives evaluated, that were not only rails parallel with the trails, or trails parallel with the rails, let's put it that way, and also alternative trails. And the one thing that, as we've looked into this, while there's a lot more people on the trails, and the woman spoke of running on the trail and jogging on the trail, I would ask those people if, when they're running or riding, do they typically take their wallets? Do they typically stop someplace and eat? Do they typically just go someplace, turn around, and come back? I know that's what I've always done when I'm on the trails, isn't necessarily to just, hey, I'm going to wander down someplace and have something to eat. While that does happen, the majority of the users of the trails that we've seen basically don't carry their wallets with them. And what we have claimed, and I believe what Mike also said, was that this is an economic impact issue. And while there may be more users on a trail, they certainly don't spend the amount of money that someone who would be eating and doing other things, buying gas, for instance, to visit that trail, because they are typically something that you do because it's close.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Brian. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Brian's got actually seven questions here. I'm only going to deal with one of them, though, because sorry, Brian, but I want to give as many people, because I think it cuts to the heart and is one of the things that's in dispute here about this. He gets to it. It's his last one. Wouldn't it be cheaper to fix the rails than build a trail? Because part of the contention is that repairing the rails was going to be cost prohibitive. And that therefore the trail was more economically viable. What are the numbers, John?
Sure. Let me go back to what the city of Fishers and Noblesville announced when they kind of said this, and they were publicly saying that it was going to take $5 to $6 million to get the railroad running again, which is false. Mm-hmm. Their own consultant basically said it was going to be $3.7 million, included $1.5 million to reconnect the line on the north end, having nothing to do with safety. Certainly, as we've looked at it, and even some of their own folks have looked at it, it could cost as little as $100,000 to get running again. Secondly, the thing that they talked about was that, gee, the trail's only going to cost us $9 million. Well, that didn't take into consideration anything that related to any kind of a bridge or crossing for busy roads like 116th or 146th, mm-hmm. not to mention the fact that if you really follow this right-of-way, it's kind of a trail to nowhere. Mm-hmm. So you pretty much have to get on it and go. You can't really stop off anywhere except where you start and where you end. And where you end in Noblesville is not exactly a place where there's lots of other Noblesville businesses or stores or shops or anything else. It falls way short of downtown. So the whole dollar cost in this, I think, has been inflated on the cost of the rail side, and it's also been minimized as far as what it would take to actually have a trail that would be usable.
We're talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Hi. A former business owner in Hamilton County and a grandmother. And I think it's a shame that we take up the rails, and I don't mind the trail being along with it, but my grandchildren may never get to ride a train otherwise, and they were so disappointed when it shut down for Polar Express and the Halloween. Now, I love to exercise, that someone just said this was a trail to nowhere. So I would like to see mixed use or refurbish the train and keep our city, one more asset for our city, because I'm always defending Indianapolis for people and relatives who live out of town. I think this is an asset, and I think it's a shame to let it be torn out. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rebecca. Mm-hmm. John.
Connie, I'm a grandfather. You probably can't see that on the radio, but I have four grandsons. And probably one of the things that drives me is I've had to travel an hour and a half out of town to take my grandsons to a day out with Thomas. That's very difficult for me, as I see, just as you do, these children have grown up experiencing the railroad, and just the joy in their faces and the joy to watch these kids experience the railroad is just, like you said, priceless.
We're going to continue this conversation, obviously. We're talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. My guests are John McNichols of the Indiana Transportation Museum and Mike Corbett of Hamilton County Business Magazine. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email or find us on social media. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are John McNichols. He is chair of the board of the Indiana Transportation Museum, and Mike Corbett, publisher of Hamilton County Business Magazine. I've gotten an email from a listener named Steve who says, it's not about how many people would visit a museum. It's about how many people would take advantage of an expanded railway system that would connect Indianapolis with Hamilton County. I have lived in Fishers since 2004, and there have been rumors and suggestions to extend light rail to Fishers since at least that time. Why is Mayor Fadness so opposed? I can't talk. That's an obstacle in radio, folks. Why is Mayor Fadness so opposed to embracing the economic opportunity presented by expanded rail? Rails and trails are the way to go. John, I'll give you first crack at that one.
Sure. We've been puzzled at this basically from the start, and in looking at all the factors even in the sheets that Fishers has put out with what I would consider propaganda, even in their logic, it just doesn't make sense. We've been looking for something more than what they're really saying. There's some little things we've seen, but we just can't seem to make it make sense to us why they would be interested in doing that, especially, as I mentioned earlier, as this is tearing out the very center of the line that is a regional line. And our plan that we've announced as part of our proposal is we have had the plan for the last 15 years to go completely downtown. So we really believe that even if it's not a commuter line of any sort, if we could get some kind of a fan train, for instance, that would leave Hamilton mm-hmm. County and go downtown and basically go behind Bankers Life Fieldhouse and across from Lucas Oil Stadium and right next to Victory Field, would that be something that the public would be interested in? We believe so. So we believe in the economics of that. What's kept us from doing that over the last 11 years is that we've not had an agreement with the cities and the Port Authority, and that's what's kept our partners from making that happen.
We've gotten several questions here, and I'm trying to combine them. We'll go with something easy to pronounce across media platforms, because some of them are coming in from social media, some by email, and listeners who call in and don't want to go on the air. And they're really saying, you know, for them, the crux of this is, to support the rail, they really want to see expanded use. They want it to be something other than a historical curio. Mm-hmm. Are there plans to do that? And what would the cost be to doing that, to expanding it to the kind of use that we're talking about where it becomes, say, a commuter option from that northeast corridor into the city and, you know, builds into really the same sort of – because – What I'm seeing here is the opposition that comes to maintaining this really is we want walkability, we want active lifestyles, we want a chance to access this. I think it was Mike who said at the top of the show that at least in Fishers they wanted a trail that would go right into the city so that you could walk into the business corridor rather than having to get into your car. What would it take to expand this so that it is use is something other than, you know, a cool place to take your kids?
Sure. Well, let's start out by talking about the trail thing you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Currently, there are several trails that end or start in downtown Fishers and downtown Noblesville. So we still see that there are alternatives to connecting this up. Secondly, I'm going to start out by saying, you know, we kind of stop short and shy away from anything called transit or commuter rail. However, we know of many cities that have partnered with more of a historic and entertainment organization to run the excursion trains and to run the weekend event trains, along with somebody who runs commuter service during the week. The interesting thing about that is it's the same right-of-way. It's the same rails. Can even be the same equipment, perhaps, with a separate operator or a separate business that's involved in that. Early on, were working with CERTA and trying to figure out what the right approach is. I think one of the things that killed the program that was being proposed at the time was just the jaw-dropping bill that they came up with to actually put rail in that corridor, or in their case, what they intended to do is rip it all up down to the roadbed and rebuild it all and buy all new equipment, which is really not the most fiscally responsible thing to do, which is kind of what killed it. Certainly, we believe that it needs to be expanded use. Our vision actually is a regional railroad where you could get on in north of Hamilton County even and come down the railroad into Fishers, Noblesville, and then all the way downtown, crossing today what is 10th Street, because the right-of-way that we currently run on goes all the way down to 10th Street, and then paralleling the other railroad right down into Union Station. And we believe that once that connection is made, if you chose to have an operator on it that did transit or commuter, that would be perfectly fine. But our mission, as it is today, is really to be an excursion and entertainment venue, so that while we would certainly want to work with somebody like that and always propose that if they ever did have a commuter rail, that we would work with them. And yet that's one of the things that I think certainly at the state level and certainly locally, there's a lot of don't want to talk about that, don't want to do it. So we're basically focused on the entertainment and the other aspects of it, although we would see that as a part of the puzzle.
We are talking about the Nickel Plate Railroad controversy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do it with a listener named Charles is down and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Charles, you're on the air.
I just had a comment and a quick question. I know we're probably getting towards the end of the segment here, but as a young person, I say that being early 30s, you know, my hesitation, long-time resident of Noblesville, and my hesitation with, you know, continuing the rail service, especially in that area, is that if you look at some of the surrounding communities, especially to the north of Noblesville, you know, a lot of those downtown areas are boarded up and really kind of a stagnant area for a lot of these communities that used to be hustling and bustling. You know, for a trail system to go in similar to the Monon or connection to for young families, I think would make sense in the regards to bringing more economic, you know, impact to the community. And I really think that that's going to be more what drives keeping the Noblesville and Hamilton County communities thriving in a time when it's really tough to do so, especially in downtown. My question, though, is there an alternative to figuring this out in that is there an option for a referendum to have this voted on? And just briefly, one more comment is that I think that what happens a lot of times is that when folks have an issue with, you know, a proposal that's going to be happening, and there's folks on both sides, is that oftentimes we hear of the ones that are only upset about the issue at hand, but maybe not the folks that either don't care or that maybe not have as strong of a voice if they are supportive of it. And just want to know what your folks on the show there have a comment on, either a vote or a referendum or some other incentive to get people to recognize this issue and make their voices known.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Mike Corbett, I'm going to throw that one to you. Is there a possibility that there could be a referendum on this or some other way for the public's voice to be heard?
Well, I'm no lawyer or lawmaker, and I'm not entirely sure what the process is for initiating a referendum. Ultimately, you know, currently the decision rests with the mayors, and whether or not they'd be willing to give up that right or that responsibility of being able to make the decision, I guess it would be up to them. I suppose you know, there's probably some kind of petition process that you'd need to go through to get a referendum going. But you know, currently the effort on the part of the folks who are trying to save the rail is just to try to let the community leaders know how the public feels as to whether or not people who don't feel strongly on the issue are just not expressing themselves. I mean, I suppose that's a possibility, but if they're not going to show up, you know, there's a question as to whether or not how they anticipate or how they expect to be counted if they're not going to speak up.
John.
Yeah, Charles, our answer is probably going to surprise you, and that is that we agree wholeheartedly with you. We believe that to connect those northern cities, a trail would be great. We believe that it could be parallel. We see no reason why it couldn't, especially in some of the rural areas. We've got a lot of right-of-way to be able to put a trail with the rails. One of the problems we've experienced as long as we've been running in Hamilton County, which is about 30 years, is that when you run up north, we've run dinner trains and pizza trains and different excursions through the years. One of the things we found is it's very difficult to keep a business in business in those small communities. We can bring them a train load of people a couple of times a week, but it's just not enough to sustain them. So we've had a difficult time with those cities and what's happened in those small towns to really continue to have places to go, if you will. And we would certainly support having more often ways for people to get there, because that's been one of our problems all along, is we haven't been able to keep those, we haven't been able to single-handedly support those economies. So we agree with you. I think that would be a great idea. But as I said, I think, again, it goes back down to we're certainly not against the trails, never have been, really believe that the right answer is a combination of multi-use, mixed-use kind of a thing with the corridor. And certainly that's one of the things that I know the cities have kind of said, well, we'll save the train, we'll just run something north. Well, our experience says that that railroad and the number of miles you have to support of that railroad, while there's some great things to do up there and more coming, it's just not enough to support the railroad by itself.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Kayla who pushes back a little bit, well, more than a little bit, at your assertion, John, that that people who use trails don't necessarily bring their wallets and spend their money. Mm-hmm. She says, has your guest ever seen the Monon Trail in Carmel on a Saturday near the Arts and Design District? Users are absolutely spending their money and dining where there are places to dine. Take a look at the number of bicycles parked. She attached a photo for Bubs, Scotty's, Basbo's, and Ped Thai. Just head a little south and you can visit a coffee shop, a brewery, a Jamaican restaurant, all of which flourish because they are off of the trail. And then she's got, you know, literally a photo attached that makes the space look like a bicycle shop.
Sure.
I'll give you real quick because we are getting tight on time and I want to get to more people here.
I used to live very close to the Monon Trail and used to be on it all the time with my kids. I know that there are times when people do ride it. They do go to restaurants, but it isn't the common everyday thing that happens. Sure, weekends are busy. Weekends are busy on the railroad, so that number of guests could also come via different means. But again, I would reiterate that we're not against the trails. We think there ought to be trails, and in fact, in many cases along our line currently in Fishers and Noblesville, there are trails that parallel the railroad with perfect harmony.
Gotten another email from a listener named Brett that I think cuts to kind of one of the central issues here. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Brett writes, I served on a committee in Noblesville made up of representatives from Cicero, Arcadia, Atlanta, Noblesville, Hamilton County, and the Port Authority that developed a master plan for a trail from Potter's Bridge Park in Noblesville up to Atlanta. At first, our goal was to pursue an option that included the rail and a trail next to it. The Port Authority's representative was not at all interested in pursuing the joint option, which seemed like a good option to most of us. Therefore, we developed a plan that runs along Highway 19. As a citizen of Arcadia, I'd like to explore the joint railroad and trail line for our communities and schools. Then he's included a link below with our proposal. It says he's sending this as a citizen, not a representative of Hamilton Heights. I'm going to take kind of what I see as the overarching theme is, you know, in most situations where you have people saying, I want this and I want that, the easiest way to solve the problem is to say, well, yeah, let's just give them both what they want, mm-hmm. and it's done. That seems to be the friction point here. And I'm going to ask both of you, why is it that it has been so hard to get, you know, people to buy into this idea of mixed use, or at least public officials to get buy into the use of mixed use? I'm going to throw that one to Mike first, but I want to hear John's thoughts as well.
Well, I think part of the reason is that they come up, I need to be careful about being accusatory here, but the city administration sort of come up with the idea first and then present it as sort of this is how it's going to be, when I feel that if they would go to the public first and say, you know, what do you think of this idea? And let's take some input and let us, why don't we put together a program based on input? I think that might be a solution that would be a little more amenable to a greater number of people, but that's not how it works. It comes across as this is what we want to do. And, you know, once you draw that line in the sand and say, this is where, you know, this is where I stand, and then start taking input, well, then you sort of become defensive because you've got to end up defending a position that was put together before you took any public input. So I think that's part of it.
John, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but I've got a full bank of phone calls and tons of messages we're not going to be able to get to. So I'm going to invite both of you, ask both of you to continue this conversation after we go off the air on sure. Facebook, because there clearly is a massive amount of public interest in sure. this. So, John, I'm going to give you your shot.
Yeah, let me answer that question with really a fact about not listening or not asking. Fishers has a study that they did a few years ago where they ask some of these questions. And one of the questions they ask is, would you use a more expanded rail attraction? And it was overwhelmingly yes. And if you actually look at their data, it's why it's even more puzzling on why they just decided that they had to rip up the rail to put trails in. We still think that there's something else there that we're just missing somehow, some piece of real estate somewhere that somebody has an interest in. But we frankly can't make the logic work, even because they have asked the question. And their own data shows that the train and the tourist impact of those excursions is something that's desirable by the public. So I think they're asking. I'm just not sure they're really looking at the data or listening to the people that are responding.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. So, John, where does the litigation go now? I mean, what status are you at? What's the timeline there?
Sure. Well, we've got a number of things pending right now, and I can't go into a lot of details, but we're still seeking to get legal action to be able to run, yet this year, the fare train.
Okay, and when do you anticipate that you will have something definitive on it?
Unfortunately, right before the fair.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid that will have to be the last word. This has been a lively conversation. I'd like to thank my guests, John McNichols, chair of the board of the Indiana Transportation Museum, and Mike Corbett, publisher of the Hamilton County Business Magazine. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for great questions, great comments. It is really fun doing a radio show for the smartest audience in Indianapolis. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.